Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For a couple of generations of Tulsans, the sound of KAKC, the Rockin' 97, playing on a car or transistor radio defined their youth. Certainly did for my guests. Growing up in Sand Springs, Steve Klim's interest in Top 40 radio and KAKC would lead to his own career working around the country as a radio program director and consultant for stations in Salt Lake City, Seattle, Albuquerque, Sacramento, Oklahoma City, and Tulsa. Today, he's the operations director for Public Radio Tulsa, but that love and interest in Top 40 radio and KAKC has always been there and never faded. A few years ago, Klim produced an award-winning radio documentary about KAKC, but his first idea to document this era of Tulsa history and Tulsa broadcasting was a book. Well, finally, the book is here. Tulsa's KAKC Radio, the Big 97, is published by Arcadia Publishing. Steve Klim is the author, and he'll be signing the book tomorrow night at a special signing at the Tulsa Historical Society at 6:30 with former KAKC DJs Mike McCarthy, Dick Schmitz, and Scooter Seagraves. In fact, it was conversations with Scooter Seagraves some 30 years ago that put the idea of a book in his mind in the first place. He joins us today to talk about KAKC's impact on Tulsa broadcasting history and on the baby boomer generation. Steve Klim, welcome to Studio Tulsa, back to Studio Tulsa. And
thank you.
I say back because we've done about a couple interviews over this. As you've been, this is the final culmination of the project. We had an exhibit, we've had the radio documentary, and now finally a book about KAKC. Now, you've told us before, but why is KAKC so important in Tulsa history?
Well, it's hard to almost to imagine the way radio was, let's say, in the late 50s when KAKC came on playing top 40 rock and roll music. But KAKC was a station that introduced a new style of radio to Tulsa. Before KAKC started playing top 40 or rock and roll, whatever you want to call it, with a consistent sound 24 hours a day, radio stations in Tulsa and all over the country were kind of like TV stations where they offered a variety of different kinds of shows and programs.
It was old-style radio where you had variety shows, you had quiz shows, you had...
Sure, comedy.
Soap operas, the whole thing, It was what television was before television was there.
Yeah, and so you got this timetable really of the 50s where there's this huge transition going on. Those radio shows, the classic radio shows, are all moving over to television. And so, and radio's kind of just has the leftovers. So maybe the network shows that weren't all that popular were the ones that were still on radio.
Now, were network people and radio executives sort of thinking, well, it's over?
Well, one thing I know for sure is that they were thinking the future was television. So they were really putting their resources in TV and letting radio just kind of lay there. And no one knew what the next thing was going to be. So, yeah, I think a lot of people thought it was over.
Now, when you first talked to the first DJs that were pioneering this format, were they scared about the future? I mean, were they looking at new careers, you know, at this point? Or I mean, because most of the, I would think the first announcers had been the traditional sort of hand-on-the-ear announcers who said, coming up, the real McCoys, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, the role changed so much for a DJ. They had no idea what was getting ready to happen to them. They were, in many cases, babysitting network shows, much like we do actually here, because a lot of what we get at Public Radio Tulsa is from a network or a satellite. So they had, they were doing a lot of babysitting. And then in between network shows, they may have a 15-minute time period where the DJ would jump in there and, you know, spin records was kind of the thing that kind of came along that made sense for local radio to do. It wasn't expensive to buy records. And then later the record companies started providing them for free. DJ labor was inexpensive. They could get a staff of DJs, inexpensively, a little bit over minimum wage probably.
So what impact did KAKC have? Because I've seen it when you've had these events here in town. There's a certain demographic here in Tulsa that this radio station was extremely important to them.
It's right. I think about 50 years old right now for baby boomers is probably the dividing line, you know. And honestly, you know, you and I were about 10 years difference in our ages. And since I was a teen in the late 60s, KAKC and AM top 40 music, that was the big thing. By the time you were coming of age in the late 70s, if I'm not giving away too much... Radio had changed. FM became available everywhere. The final thing on that was the technology of FM had been around a long time, but they hadn't really been able to conquer getting in all the cars. Most of the cars up until the early 70s just had AM radios. Once FM got into the cars, these FM stations had really been waiting in the wings a long time, and they started coming on the air, stations like KMOD. There was Queen Stereo here in Tulsa that really was a beautiful music type, easy listening
station. That's now K95, a country station.
Yeah, exactly. So you had these stations, and suddenly people were noticing, gosh, the fidelity is so much better. The music sounds better on FM. And so AM paled by comparison, so the 70s was really the downfall of AM top 40 radio, because the music just sounded so much better on FM, so everybody switched over.
So this was a medium of listening in your car, listening to transistor radios.
Yeah, the technology.
Am I overstating this? Because, you know, nostalgia and movies sort of shape at least my memory of what this era was like.
Well, yeah, there's really about a 20-year time period where AM top 40 radio dominated from about 1955, 56 to about 1975, and that's the era that everyone has the big nostalgia for KAKC, anyone growing up during that time frame. And the technology really coincided with the boom of top 40 radio, because in about 1955, the first transistor radio was introduced by a company called Regency, and then Sony jumped in there. And all these Japanese-made radios started flooding the U.S. market, and they became the most successful consumer product ever introduced. Transistor radios had incredible penetration. Something like 97% of households ended up owning a transistor radio.
This is like an iPod or a personal music player.
Exactly, and radio is how we got our music back then. You know, there weren't a lot of sources for music, and so radio was how we got it. And I can't relate to you the excitement of having your transistor radio and listening to KAKC, hearing the DJs who were speaking our language. You know, if you were growing up, they were talking to us. They were introducing us to the latest releases by Elvis Presley, the Beatles, you know, once it got up into the 60s, all the great Motown stuff. There was just an incredible music, pop music explosion, you know, along that time. And that's how we got it, by listening to KAKC.
You tell a story, and you've told this story often, about Lee Bailey, who was one of the KAKC disc jockeys, probably in the golden era in the 60s. And he comes back to Tulsa 40 years from now. He rents a car. He says his name, and the counterperson says, "I want your autograph." That gives you a sense of the cultural phenomenon of this and how important it was to people growing up. And these DJs were sort of our hometown stars in many ways.
They were, absolutely, especially the ones that had been there for a while.
It's hard to imagine that you know, just a radio DJ would have that sort of influence, but it did during the 50s.
They did, and I heard someone say it, you know, really well. In our eyes, the DJ was right up there next to the musician, almost as important as the musician who did the song. This guy was the guy that was the expert on music. He was bringing us this music. He was usually a personality who was fun and, you know, would. Some of them were like stand-up comedians. Certainly Scooter Seagraves was a stand-up comedian, but his, you know, palette was these 10 and 15-second windows of time over the introduction of a song before the vocal started, and that's where he told his jokes and did his thing. So it's just, yeah, the DJ was elevated in our minds. They were celebrities, and when everyone went to a rock concert at some time in their lives, the first KAKC sock hops really were at the Continental Skating Rink, which is near Tracy Park on 11th. It's no longer there. It got absorbed by the freeway system that goes through there. And the DJs, whenever they would appear there, they were celebrities. They were right there with the bands that were playing. And then the Civic Center opened in 63, and the same thing. The DJs would introduce the acts that played at the Civic Center. And almost everyone growing up in that time, Rich, in the Tulsa area and surrounding communities, has some kind of communal experience with KAKC, attending a concert. A lot of people bought 45s. And they would pick up a copy of the weekly record survey that KAKC had from about 1958 into the mid-70s. That was almost like a rite of passage. If you were a teen, you got the, the Big 30 record survey usually had a picture or two of a DJ on it, and a lot of those pictures are in the book.
Now, this is a pretty picture-heavy book. I mean, this isn't one of the Arcadia publications. They tend to do that. And really, you're telling the story. There's an essay at the beginning, but really, you're telling the story of KAKC through pictures. And it's amazing pictures. I assume you're working with a lot of people who were involved in the day, and I guess you have a lot of memorabilia as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, the fact that our station here at Public Radio Tulsa partnered with the Tulsa Historical Society on the KAKC exhibit, they gathered even more photos, you know, from some of them just from regular people who sent in their photos to them for the exhibit. So I was able to draw on all the photos that were in the exhibit at the Historical Society as well.
You know, one of the names that's been sort of synonymous with Tulsa Broadcasting is Dick Schmitz, who there's a lot of pictures by him from mm-hmm. him in this book. But you know, Dick was one of those, I would have to say he's probably one of those original announcers, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He made the transition, didn't he?
He was actually, he moved, I believe it was from Champaign, Illinois, he and his wife, shortly after they were married. And so he got to Tulsa after KAKC had been doing Top 40 music for a few months. So almost from the very beginning, Dick Schmitz was there. And then Clayton Vaughn joined the staff a couple of years after that and was the KAKC news director, really doing all the stuff that TV news does now, because they were the ones, radio was on the spot reporting. If there was a traffic accident in downtown Tulsa in an intersection, KAKC would do a live report from the scene. I mean, it was just a lot different than you know, than radio news now
right.
on the radio. It's TV that, you know, that does all the live reports from different spots around town. But that was KAKC's domain. And Rich, not only did they play Top 40 music and were known for that, but they were just a threat on so many levels to every other station. They did the spot news reporting better than the other stations. They did, their DJs were always better than the other radio stations. And once I got established, other Tulsa stations would try Top 40 for a while, trying to get some of their audience, and there was only one, which was KELI 1430, that ever really was there for the long run.
So how big was KAKC in its heyday? You know, today, if you have like a 10 share, you're number one in Tulsa.
Absolutely.
In
those days, when they would publish the ratings from two different sources, which were Hooper and Pulse, KAKC shares would be approaching 50% with all radio listeners in Tulsa. They were, you know, usually in the 40%, 40 to 45% range. Can you imagine that? Almost half the people in Tulsa who had radios tuned to a station were listening to that one station, KAKC, and the other half dozen stations, which is all there was at that time on AM, they were all listening to the other ones. It's unbelievable.
My guest today is Steve Klim. He works here at Public Radio Tulsa, but he's been a veteran radio broadcaster working at stations as the old WKRP theme song said, for those who remember that, up and down the dial and all over the country. But his first love was KAKC radio, and he's written a book, Tulsa's KAKC Radio, The Big 97. It's published by Arcadia, and he'll have a signing tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Tulsa Historical Society with some of the KAKC jocks. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa, talking about the cultural influence of this radio station. Now, how did you get interested? I mean, this is something you listened to growing up, but yeah. I assume it's what put you in radio in the first place.
Absolutely. There's a fairly large group of us who went to Oklahoma State University in the early 70s. We'd grown up listening to KAKC, and that's why we wanted to go into radio. It was exciting. It was fun. And so we went to Oklahoma State University, and when we all graduated, well, KAKC was no longer there. KAKC had a pretty sudden death. They went off the air in January, actually New Year's Day of 1979. And so just as I was getting out of college and getting reared up for radio, that was no longer an option. And so FM had come on, and so I started working at KREV, which was 96.5 on the dial, and then they had a sister station on AM called KGTO, AM 1050, and I worked there. And so, you know, a lot of us had grown up with KAKC, and we always had this affinity, and then I worked with Scooter C. Graves, who'd been one of the legendary KAKC DJs. He came back to Tulsa in the 80s one more time, and we worked together at a station called Magic 99. That's when I thought, you know what? I'm friends with Scooter now. I've got access to the real stuff. I should be the one to tell the story of KAKC. And I just kind of sat on it for a while. Then I started gathering information about it. And then when I started working here, Rich, and I told you about it, you actually said to me, well, have you ever thought that maybe you could do a documentary in conjunction with a book? You probably don't remember saying this. And this light bulb went off in my head. And I thought, oh, I have all these guys who I've already interviewed on paper come into the studio and talk, and we'll do a documentary where people can hear their voices now. And I thought part of the appeal of it was being able to hear Lee Bailey again, a guy that, you know, people had grown up with and he was just a celebrity to us. Now we get to hear him talking about his KAKC days. And my big question to them, Rich, was I was like, I wonder how they view their time at KAKC now, all these years later. Was it a
just
fun
a
experience?
Way stop or a way stop on their career?
Yeah, and almost all of them viewed the KAKC years as pretty much like the highlight of their radio careers, even if they'd worked all around the country at different stations. They said there was something special about working at KAKC in Tulsa.
And this is the other thing, is most of these DJs went off to the biggest markets in the country, Chicago, L.A., New York. I mean, just most of them went off to big careers in the biggest markets in the country.
Absolutely. Tulsa, I don't know why, but Tulsa, for some reason, had an incredible talent pool of people who were good in the radio medium during those years. One of the most famous was at KAKC, really only briefly. His name was Danny Dark. And he ended up being the voice of NBC television in Hollywood for many years, from the 60s and 70s mainly, and was the voice of like commercials like Starkist Tuna,
yeah, right.
You know, the Sorry Charlie. I'm not even going to try to imitate him because I don't have anything, a voice, anything like his. But there were just a steady stream of people, Rich, who came through KAKC, and they were able then to jump off to a big station, like you said.
So who do you attribute that to? Was it just being here? Because most of these guys were transplants that came in here. So who was the person who was hiring all these people?
Well, KAKC, for whatever reason, always did have the best people. They had really high standards with everything they did. And the general manager and the program director are usually the people who set those standards. And Dick Schmitz, during the first 9 years of them being top 40, was really the guiding force of that station. Very demanding person in terms of excellence and quality. And they were just great people who worked there. And if you had a character flaw maybe that kept you from being able to appear in public and, you know, you probably weren't going to make it on the KAKC staff, because a lot of what they did were personal appearances and a lot of stunts back then, like the Tulsa Boat Show. There's a picture in there of Dick Schmitz and the guys broadcasting underwater. National Tank has built them this huge tank, and they've got scuba gear, and they're broadcasting their shows underwater. A lot of stunts in those days.
What I found interesting was just flipping through the pictures, you see America changing before your eyes, you know, because in the 1950s, all these guys are clean cuts. They got the little thin ties and the thin lapels, and they're looking just as clean. And then all of a sudden, okay, the hair starts growing, the mustaches grow, and you sort of see this sort of cultural trend. And I'm sure this sort of reflected it on the air as times change in the 60s. All of a sudden, you know, Bobby Darin is out and the Beatles and, you know, the British invasion is in. They had to really shift on a dime. And I suppose that's probably how they operated, because it was top 40. It was whatever was current at the moment. And it really didn't matter. It didn't matter if it was Motown, rock and roll, or a country song. It was the most popular records that were played on the air.
That's exactly right. A lot of people forget that Top 40 radio was really a melting pot of all those different kinds of music. And country was always a big influence in Tulsa's Top 40. You'd see songs on the KAKC list by artists that were, you know, exclusive to the country charts. But in Tulsa, you know, those songs by those artists did well and made the top 40. So it was really a blend. But to your point about the changing of the culture, you know, you can almost pinpoint the year. 1966, 1967, right in there. If you look at pictures from 1966, people still have the thin ties. The guys usually have pretty short hair. And then 1967, you know, the Summer of Love and Hate Ashbury and, you know, Flower Children and the Vietnam War, all of these things just kind of came together for a huge counterculture that erupted, and KAKC kind of led the charge, you know, on that. They're the station that played the, quote, psychedelic music when it came out around 67, 68. The DJs are basically unrecognizable from a year or two before because their hair is down to their shoulders by the time, you know, the late 60s roll around. And it's just, well, look at Leon Russell, Tulsa musician. He had a long history with KAKC, doing concerts for them. He'd show up in the studio sometimes for interviews. You look at him in the 60s till about 66 when he's producing records out in California, and he's got on the normal suit and short hair. And then Leon Russell morphs into this person he became in the late 60s that he still is, with the long hair and the very distinctive, you know, look of Leon Russell.
My guest today is Steve Clem. He's one of our employees here at Public Radio Tulsa, our operations director. He's a veteran radio broadcaster, worked at stations all around the country, but his first love was KAKC Radio. He's written a book called Tulsa's KAKC Radio, The Big 97. There'll be a signing tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Tulsa Historical Society, featuring a couple of the KAKC disc jockeys, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa as we talk about this new book. Well, again, you talk about this time was limited. It really was only about a 20-year period, but, you know, you've done this sort of resurrection of this great station through your, you know, this book now, but also the documentary and the exhibit at the Historical Society. People really are attached to this era, and I suppose that's just sort of nostalgia. You know, it was you were young, but I've been really interested in how many people, you know, really think fondly of this day and age.
Yeah, you know,
and how important radio was to
them. Yeah, studying radio demographics like I have, you know, doing radio around the country, it's pretty normal for men, for guys, to gravitate toward the music they grew up with. That's why, like, classic rock formats are so popular on the radio. And oldies stations, if you look at the breakdown of their demos, are usually, maybe 55 or 60% men who listen to those stations. And so it's kind of normal for guys to think about growing up and the music they listen to and the station they listen to. But here you'll find women all the time who were just so attached to this radio station. So real credit to KAKC for being able to be so, you know, broad, where everyone really liked it. Those DJs they had, they were entertainers. They talked to us, you know, in our own language. They were a lot of times, you know, telling us, you know, how to communicate, because they would use words and phrases that they heard, and then those phrases and words, you know, would start being in the culture here. Like, you know, like things like groovy and heavy. Things became heavy, and a lot of the things is, hey, we're going to do this tonight at 6, dig it. I mean, there was just a kind of a hip language that KAKC talked, you know, that they evolved with the times, whatever was big, and they were leading the charge for the youth and the young adults in the Tulsa area.
Yeah, you mentioned Danny Dark, who went on to be the voice of NBC and a major voiceover artist, but where did most of these jocks go? I mean, Scooter Seagraves, I know, will be back for the signing. He just worked in various radio stations around the country.
Yeah, that's the thing a lot of people, you know, that grew up listening to him don't realize. He would leave for a couple of years and go be a program director for Bill Drake, the big consultant that worked with KAKC starting in 1967. And Drake had stations all around the country that he consulted, so he would take Scooter Seagraves, and once Scooter learned the system of Top 40 that Bill Drake did, he got Scooter to go to Memphis and be the program director of his Memphis station. Then Scooter came back to Tulsa for a while on KAKC. Then he went to San Bernardino, California. Anyway, he jumped all around doing this kind of thing. Same with the guys like Lee Bailey. When he left here, he moved to Los Angeles and became one of the key figures in Drake Chenault consulting, and Lee worked with stations all over the country there from Los Angeles. And so a lot of the DJs really benefited from Bill Drake and his involvement in KAKC. Drake was this really avant-garde radio programmer who was the guru of the moment in radio in the late 60s. And his stations all around the country, they sounded different. They sounded more modern. They had these jingles that they played every few minutes that said the call letters. And they were really produced exceptionally well. And KAKC got Bill Drake to do that to them, give them a makeover in 67. And it really kind of revitalized KAKC and the people who were working there, like Robert Walker, Bo Weaver, Scooter Seagraves, Lee Bailey, they all benefited from that and were able to go to other markets because of their association with Bill Drake.
Now, you mentioned KAKC, when it first became a top 40 station, was sort of reinventing radio, and you outlined the history. This was a part of a movement in the 50s, but KAKC was one of the early adherents to that. And radio had sounded like what we now know as television with various shows, you know, Bob Hope and all the like. And then all of a sudden in the 50s, it switched to these formats. And of course, then later in the late 80s, all of a sudden, instead of playing, you know, the greatest hits of all genres, you pick one genre and you play it. What's the next reinvention for radio? Because, you know, you're looking at media just sort of concentrating on us. I wonder if you mentioned it with some of these guys, or what do you think that next reinvention of radio is going to be?
I think we're seeing a couple of things.
None of these media ever go away.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see, you know, already when iPods were introduced, and, you know, they've only been with us, I don't know, I'm going to say maybe 5 to 7 years that iPods, well, immediately radio had to make some changes and have a more music-intensive listening experience, or else because now there were iPods where someone could just listen to their songs and they didn't have to put up with basically the clutter that they heard on radio. Radio had gotten kind of heavy with, you know, they just kept adding more and more commercials. I'm talking about commercial radio, of course. More and more commercials, more and more DJ talk, and really more and more uninteresting DJ talk. And the iPod came along and forced radio really to streamline and to be a more music-intensive experience. And now you'll find a lot of radio stations, music stations, have a very little presence of a DJ, and that's prompted all the trade publications really to do articles recently about, is this the end of the radio DJ? And so, you know, that's one of the big questions now. And then the other one is okay, radio, it looks like, is just going to end up being another of many choices for the consumer in their cars. Because the new cars that are coming out, you know, you've got satellite radio as an option. You've got internet radio as an option. You've got the early internet, you know, stations that are starting to, you know, get known, like Pandora, mm-hmm. and where you can really basically program your own radio station with your music tastes. And so it looks like that radio is just going to be another thing that's available to the consumer, and we'll just have to see, hopefully, the local angle of a radio station being able to serve their local community and have local news, local traffic information. And I think local might be what saves radio and keeps them, you know, having a place there in the car on the dial.
Well, for 20 years, KAKC defined local. The name of the book is Tulsa's KAKC Radio, The Big 97. Steve Klim will be signing the book tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Tulsa Historical Society with a few of the KAKC DJs from the golden era. And Steve, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Veteran radio broadcaster, program director, and consultant Steve Klim, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He's currently our operations director here at the station and the author of Tulsa's KAKC Radio, The Big 97. He'll be signing the book at an event tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Tulsa Historical Society with former KAKC DJs Dick Schmitz, Scooter Seagraves, and Mike McCarthy. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just search for Studio Tulsa at the top of the page, and you can listen on demand. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.